teachers with guns, bulletproof glass, and code red training. Some of the recommendations after the Stoneman Douglas school shooting. Hello and welcome to the South Florida Roundup this week on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. The panel examining the Stoneman Douglas shooting this week released its rough draft of recommendations. One idea, arm teachers. School security and police training are scrutinized in the report from the task force. While it says some deputies responded correctly during the shooting, it finds others were slow to take action. Also, a new elevated train gets an okay for North Miami-Dade County, and state money for bus rapid transit going south could be coming. Has Miami's transit problems turned a corner? Your phone calls coming up on the South Florida Roundup right here on WLRN after the news. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. Better law enforcement and stronger school security. Those were the big takeaways from the draft report released this week by the State Commission investigating the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. The report runs 16 chapters, over 400 pages long. It lists where several Broward County agencies failed, and it also makes recommendations to avoid another school shooting in the future. One idea isn't new, though, arming teachers. The State Commission asks lawmakers to expand the so-called Guardian program that allows some school staff to carry firearms. Ryan Petty is a member of the commission. His daughter, Elena, died on February 14th.
One of the more compelling things to me is that those teachers were defenseless sitting in those classrooms along with those students at the wrong end of a semi-automatic rifle. And to not give them the opportunity to protect themselves, I think, is a disservice to the teachers.
The only member of the commission who voted against the recommendations to arm teachers was Max Schachter. His son, Alex, was also killed in the shooting. Deborah Hickson's husband, Chris, the school's athletic director, died in the tragedy as well. She told the commission on Wednesday this week that her late husband was a security specialist and trained a military officer with no duties other than protecting students, but she was not supportive of arming teachers.
Classroom teachers cannot and should not be distracted with the responsibility of being armed inside a classroom, even if they think they want to. The probability of something going wrong clearly outweighs that one time that there may be a shooter in the classroom.
The commission also wants every school district in Florida to have policies in place and equip classrooms to handle an on-campus shooting. So this is where we begin the Florida Roundup here this week in South Florida. Do you think Florida teachers should be allowed to carry guns in the classroom with proper training? Will locked gates and doors help? How could it affect this overall school environment? How about hard corners and bulletproof glass? What should schools be required to do to protect students and staff? And how do you pay for it? 800-743-WLRN is our telephone number to join our conversation here on the South Florida Roundup. 800-743-9576. We're also on social media on Twitter. You can look for our handle at WLRN. WLRN's Broward County reporter Katie Swatowski is back with us here on the South Florida Roundup. And Broward County Democratic State Senator Lauren Book is with us as well. Senator Book, a member of the commission investigating the shooting. Her district includes Coral Springs, just south of Stoneman Douglas High School. Katie, let me begin here. Remind us what the purpose of this task force has been.
So it was created by the legislature this past legislative session this year after the shooting happened. It was in the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Safety Act. And in that big bill of things that happened after the shooting, this task force, this commission was one of them. And their purpose was to investigate what happened on February 14th and leading up to the shooting as well, and then come up with recommendations to the state legislature and the governor on what can be done better, both in terms of schools and law enforcement.
And what will happen to those recommendations?
So they're going to go to the governor's office and the state legislature, and, you know, they're going to be in front of the legislature to consider in the upcoming legislative session.
Senator Book, you are a member of this committee. Are you satisfied that the committee got to what happened on February 14th?
You know, I think this has been a Herculean task. Over the last 8 months, we have really dedicated 100% of ourselves into looking at the things that happened. And I think this is a very good picture. The work of the task force is not done here. And even when the final report is submitted in January, we still have several more years, actually, two or three more years to continue the work, to put together a work product. You know, there's a lot more of the mental health component mm-hmm. that we did not necessarily get to cover here. You know, and some stuff that deals with firearms and accessibility. And there are some other things that the commission will, I believe, in the preceding years will continue to look at, because I think this is not a single faceted incident. And I think that these things will continue to grow.
The report goes into detail. It took a witness testimony of school security resource officers, of Broward County Sheriff's deputies, Coral Springs police officers, fire rescue, parents. It took a long list of witnesses included in here. And there are buckets of recommendations at the tail end. Some of them include school security. Some of them include law enforcement training and preparation. But let's tackle, first of all, the school security part and this idea of arming teachers. This it was a program that began mm-hmm. with the legislature and the law that was passed in the aftermath of the tragedy. And the body in which you belong to has voted to recommend to expand that Guardian program to allow teachers to carry concealed weapons in school without the approval of the local county sheriff.
Well, so I think if there's a couple of things that that the recommendation specifically speaks to. So the first part of that is there are some districts in the state that are not abiding and following 7026 in terms of the Guardian program.
That's the House bill that became law.
Yes, the Senate bill that became law. And it really outlines that a school district and the school board must pass and want to engage with the Guardian program, and then the sheriff, as a check and balance, really will engage and begin training some of these guardians. It was very clear that that would not extend to classroom based personnel.
That's right.
What the recommendation does look at is expanding it to that classroom based personnel. You know, I think that when we look at the totality of these facts, after really extensively watching every single second of the things that happened from 2:22 on February 14th on, in 69 seconds, within 69 seconds, law enforcement still was just now getting a call, the first call, to head out to Marjory Stoneman Douglas. At that point in time, 22 students and teachers had been shot and or killed. Seconds, moments count. And in looking at the totality of these facts, it is essential that we have people there on the school grounds to be able to respond, to keep students and faculty safe in these types of events. And, you know,
support that being classroom teachers with firearms.
I think that this is a recommendation for the legislature to look at. Mm-hmm. And based on these facts, I think that we do have to have somebody on that campus to be able to engage and keep those children and teachers safe. We listened
more than school resource officers.
Well, we saw how that went. That school resource officer stood there for 48 minutes. He was dropped off at the doors of the 1200 building.
You're speaking about Scott Peterson in this case.
Yeah. He did not go in. When he was dropped off at those doors, the shooter had not even gotten to the end of the first floor hallway.
You heard Deborah Hickson say in our opening kind of lead in here. She's the wife of Chris Hickson, the athletic director who died in the shooting, saying the probability of something going wrong clearly outweighs that one time there may be a shooter in the classroom. She's opposed to classroom teachers mm-hmm. Carrying firearms. How do you answer that criticism, that concern?
So I've spoken and have had the opportunity to speak to and get to know Ms. Hickson. She is a teacher in Broward County Public Schools. Mm-hmm. And so I understand her concern. What I would say is, as a legislator also, in counties and districts throughout the state, like Glades County, for example, mm-hmm. the closest law enforcement entity is 30 miles away.
Yeah, much more rural county than we have here in South Florida.
Correct. Yeah. While we tend to have a very urban view of what this is and what this looks like. When we look at the totality of the state, 30 minutes is an eternity, true eternity in this type of event.
And I think we've seen that a lot, too, with people asking, okay, so these recommendations are statewide. Mm-hmm. When you have schools that are so much smaller or so much more rural, how are these going to, across the board, be implemented equally? And I think that that question of implementation has been a huge question for the commission on, you know, how can we not only just tell schools, we think you should lock all of your doors, how are we going to make sure that they're actually locking their doors? Because I think a big factor that happened after 7026 or the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act, I think the commission saw that some schools and some school districts across the state really were not implementing those changes after the shooting had already happened.
Yeah, I think any parent in South Florida can certainly see how the school experience as a parent, and I'm speaking as a parent of a couple of public school kids, has changed. But in different ways, depending upon how the local administration may be interpreting or maybe putting
it's a school by school basis for some of these.
And what's truly terrifying, really, is there have been 92 school shootings this year alone
in Florida,
in this country,
in the country. Mm-hmm. Right.
And what we see is that this is trending upward. This is not an issue that's going away. We have to look at school safety in a different way. And I would ask, and I have said to several people, do you think this is extreme? And the answer is yes. I do, too.
800-743-9576. That's the phone number to call to join our conversation here. We've got a lot to talk about. School security, law enforcement response, law enforcement changes in light of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting and the task force out with its draft report this week. We've got Broward County Democratic State Senator Lauren Book along with us, a member of the commission investigating the shooting, and WLRN's Broward County reporter Katie Swietlowski. You can join that conversation again, 800-743-9576. We'll begin in Broward County. Leonard in Hollywood on line 3. Go ahead, Leonard. You're on the radio.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure. Go ahead.
In the school system, I'm a substitute teacher trying to get a regular teacher job, reaching out. Yes, I would like to be able to carry a gun in the classroom and defend myself as students if necessary.
You broke up there right at the end there. A substitute teacher who you would like to be armed when you're in the classroom.
I would like to be armed to be able to protect my students and myself. And even if I'm there for just one day, they're still my students and my responsibility.
Yeah.
So I'd like to be able to do that, and anything could go wrong with anything, but it's much better. Even if the school resource official is great and comes there in a few minutes, that's still a few more minutes. Also, by the way, they do lock the doors in every Broward County school that I've been in this year. They're always locking the doors. Every single classroom door is always locked.
Is that a change from years past, Leonard?
I think the policy was a lot more casual last year. I was a substitute last year, and then this year.
Yeah.
This year, every door that I've been in, they lock it right away. They don't even give me the substitute a key. I have to wait for somebody to get
Leonard,
me in there.
Thanks for sharing your experience. Senator Book, how about what you hear from Leonard, but also this recommendation? Would it apply to substitute teachers like Leonard, and how do you kind of manage that as a school district?
So one of the things I think that's also really important that I was actually quite frankly shocked when we interviewed a lot of the teachers at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, this was a recommendation that they told our investigators that they wanted an opportunity to keep their students safe. And I think that would be something.
So they said keep their students. They didn't say to be armed.
Oh, yes, they did.
They did say that. Okay.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
And I think that part of, I think, what people need to understand is these are simply a set of recommendations based on the facts of this investigation and in these findings. I think that I don't know necessarily that substitute teachers would qualify under the current Guardian program. But I also think that people have a misunderstanding of the current Guardian program. These are sworn law enforcement officers. They have to undergo psychological evaluations. They have 132 hours of on firearms training alone. Beyond that, we're not just, you know, I was a school teacher. I was a kindergarten teacher here in Miami-Dade County when I started my career so many years ago. But, you know, I would not have qualified and I wouldn't have been very good and I would not have passed. And so I think, like, just because, you know, I think that a lot of heated and mm-hmm. emotions are into this, and I understand that. And trust me, I do think this is an extreme measure. But I think it's something that we have to honestly look at in terms of safety. There is not enough law enforcement to even fill the slots at schools.
The law enforcement shortage is very apparent, even in Broward. I mean, Fort Lauderdale had to ask local police officers to help when it came time to meet this requirement for the first day of school. So you see it everywhere.
Katie, is the current Guardian program in play in Broward County?
Yes. And I actually went to a training of a Guardian training, one of the first classes. They are on a huge field with the Sheriff's Office. Broward County Sheriff's Office is involved. And they are very strictly, I mean, they're practicing different targets. They're taught how to hold the gun. Where do you store the gun? Mm-hmm. How do you aim the gun? So from the distance that I was able to watch that, it seemed like it was a very controlled environment. I think a counter argument to that would be a school shooter situation is not a controlled environment. But they certainly do have to meet the hours long training.
Yeah. Let's get a phone call in here. Senator Book from the district, Coral Springs. Chad is calling in. Go ahead, Chad. You're on the roundup.
Yeah. So, you know, I definitely, well, thank you for taking the call. And, you know, and here with this conversation, I see that there's lots of layers and lots of things to be unpacked. You know, my idea here to throw into the pot is that why did it have to be lethal enforcement that teachers are carrying? Because I'm a gun owner. I have my gun. And whenever I step out, the few times that I think I might want to step out with my gun while I'm with my children, I'm honestly nervous to death that, you know, God forbid something goes off, something transpires. And so now you have a teacher inside of a classroom of 20 to 30 students inside of a school of a couple thousand children, you know, a couple hundred to a thousand children. You know, if a school fight breaks out, that teacher feel like, okay, I'm standing my ground. So now I pull out and I shoot, or I'm defending the student's life because he's getting beat up and I see a little bit of blood. So now I need to pull out my gun and shoot him. You know, if a gun needs to be at play, you know, is there a way to use rubber bullets? You know, I would think that flash bombs would be a better idea than teachers carrying guns.
Chad, good question. Let's put it to the senator here. What do you say to Chad?
Well, Chad, first of all, thank you so much for calling in. And you know, this actually did come up in the commission meeting and in the debate and discussion relating to this recommendation. And so, number one, the weapon can only be used by a guardian in the event of an active assailant. So that's the only time that it's permissible to be used. And number two, which I also think is really interesting, and the you know, discussion about stand your ground did come up, and the chair addressed the fact that just because you have a weapon and talked about concealed weapon users typically, that you don't use it. And I think that was an interesting dynamic. You know, I think that there are that these are lots of things to look at and think about.
What about Chad's point about non-lethal force, like a taser? I mean, he talked about rubber bullets, but what about a taser? I mean, law enforcement officers include tasers in their arsenal.
Max Schachter suggested hallway smoke bombs. A lot of things were brought up.
Yeah, I think that a lot of things are being addressed here. And again, when I asked you the question, do you think this is extreme? I do too. But I think we need to really look at school safety in its totality. I think it's extreme that Broward County Public Schools doesn't have an active assailant policy still to this day, 11 months after this horrific shooting that happened at their school, that we don't have an accurate picture of threat assessments that were done at schools throughout the district and throughout the state, quite frankly, that schools throughout the state and districts do not report oftentimes violent crimes to the department and to the state. You know, we have learned of murders that have occurred on school campuses that were never reported to the state, sexual assaults, pedophiles being on campuses, having access and sometimes assaulting children that have never been reported. Parents don't have a true picture of what safety is. And I think that is extreme.
Let me squeeze in another call here on the issue of school safety in Wilton Manors. Karen, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm shaking with anger at what State Senator Book is saying, first of all, today is the anniversary of Sandy Hook. Mm-hmm. And to think that she is on the radio promoting more guns in our public schools is disgusting. I challenge her to come up with one example where a good guy with a gun has stopped a bad guy with a gun. One example. And I don't want to hear that she was a teacher. One example. And, you know, recently WLRN actually tried to interview the sheriff in charge of the commission and asked him about the concerns of parents of color being in school with armed teachers. And you know what he said? He wasn't going to even address that question. Mm-hmm. So you know what I say, State Senator? Shame on you. Just give a blank check to the NRA. Shame on you.
Karen, thank you for sharing your passion. Senator Book, would you like to respond?
You know, I think that, again, and please trust and understand that I am very sensitive to gun violence, to the issues that she's addressing. Trust me, I know all of the anniversaries. I know all of the birthdays. I know all of the things about this issue. I have seen things I can't unsee, quite frankly. And what we know from the history, from the facts, often, I believe it's 90% of the time, these types of events are stopped by school-based personnel. That was covered by several of the presenters throughout the time that we've, you know, talked about this type of targeted violence in schools.
Active shooters on school campuses.
Mm-hmm.
9/10 of the time are stopped by school officials.
That's what I've seen in presentations to the commission from various agencies. They do say by far, I can't speak to 9 out of every 10 times, but absolutely, you know, the majority of the times the commission has been told, you know, they are stopped by people at school.
Yeah, I have my binder across the table, but and I can pull through and look
not
through
sure
some
quite
of
where
that.
But
again, those are the individuals that are there, and we know how, and we will get to the response of law enforcement. Even in the best situation, the first law enforcement officer didn't know to even go to Marjory Stoneman Douglas until 22 individuals were shot and or killed.
We will talk about that law enforcement response and some of the scrutiny that has happened with this state task force looking into the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooting. The draft report out this week. Senator Lauren Book, a member of that committee representing parts of that school area in Coral Springs, just south of the actual high school. And our WLRN reporter from Broward County, Katie Swatulski, also with us. Lots of phone calls, arming school teachers, bulletproof glass mandatory, law enforcement shall engage an active shooter or may engage an active shooter. Your thoughts, 800-743-9576, as the South Florida Roundup continues after this. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting WLRN. The State Commission investigating the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School met for the last time on Thursday. It held a two-day meeting in Tallahassee this week while freshman lawmakers were attending orientation, and the commission released its draft report. The final examination is due on New Year's Day, laying out recommendations for improving how law enforcement and schools can prevent the possibility of a future school shooting. Max Schachter lost his son Alex in the February 14th shooting at Marjory Stoneman. He serves on the commission.
We either stop the murderer or his bullets. If we are stopping the bullets, we have failed, and it's already too late. Our goal here today is to stop the killing before it starts.
The report calls on law enforcement to enact clearer active shooter policies for police officers. Broward County's policy states that law enforcement may confront a threat. Other agencies have policies stating that they shall confront an active shooter. Lauren Book is a Broward County State Senator representing parts of the district in which students draw from Marjory Stoneman Douglas, although not specifically where the high school is located. Katie Swatulski covers Broward County for us here at WLRN. Katie, what were the criticisms leveled at Broward Sheriff's deputies specifically by this report?
it's hard to say where to start because there have been so many. And I think if you live in Broward, that's all you've been hearing lately is, you know, officers didn't go in. They didn't know where to go. I think a big part of the confusion that they were criticized for is not having clear levels of command, not knowing who was in charge, not knowing where their stationed command centers were going to be and what they were going to do with those posts. Those avenues led to so many things. I think one of the bigger issues in the shooting is the delay in the surveillance video. So Broward sheriff's officers were led to believe that the video was live, and it was not. It was 26 minutes delayed. So I think having communication, you know, that just shows the numerous communication errors we know happened, but it also shows part of the commission's recommendations that, you know, officers have access to live video.
There was also a lot of criticism about the active shooter policy.
Shall versus may.
That's right. Go into that for us here.
There is no uniformity across the state with that for different sheriff's departments. In Broward County, the policy says you may go in and address a threat. Other districts say you shall go in and address a threat. And there has been a lot of discussion about that during multiple months of commission meetings. But other counties, like Senator Book was telling me earlier, say shall not go address a threat. I mean, there's really no sense of direction. And I think during Sheriff Scott Israel's testimony to the commission in November, he made a clear point that the choice of the word may go in and address a threat was his decision, his policy, because he felt like officers need discretion.
Mm-hmm. So, Senator Book, should that be a uniform policy in Florida, to have an active shooter policy that that stretches across law enforcement, that the counties all agree on, all law enforcement agree on? And maybe is there an exception for active shooters at schools versus active shooters at malls or wherever else this tragedy may happen?
You bring up a good point. And I said this at the commission, it shouldn't be where you are at any given time, whether you live or die. And I think that is truly horrific when you think about it and look at it in its totality. What the commission has found is there is a hodgepodge of a tremendous amount, not just the may versus shall in this law enforcement, but throughout the, you know, school policies. And so I think that there should be a standard. There should be one best practice that folks look to. But, you know, I think that it, again, speaks to kind of where we are in 2018. Here's what people should be very upset about, very concerned about, that there are places in our state that don't have policies at all that say do not go address a threat. I know that there has been much made of the may versus shall. But again, I hope that people take a lot away from this report, not just some of the more controversial components.
There is a lot there. It's 400 pages long, certainly. But on this may versus shall, I mean, is the committee working on a specific recommendation about what an active shooter policy should be for law enforcement in the state of Florida?
We talk about the fact that a policy must be created. Our task is not necessarily
for the state
to be writing it. That the legislature should possibly look at what that could or should be. Partly because this is a best practice, but again, our task, and I think that's what people need to understand. And again, I understand a lot of the emotion around this. This what our charge in this capacity to sit on this commission was to look at the facts of what happened on February 14th and to provide findings and recommendations. Going forward, we have years to address some of the other issues related to mass shootings and mass violence.
And so the recommendation is being made that there is a best practice, that there is a policy made. Now, that is something I would like to point out that does not cost anything, does not cost the legislature something to say all law enforcement agencies need to do this. And the commission's recommendations go in tiers or levels. So level one are things that can be done right away, things like having locked door policies or making hard corners in classrooms. And then you move into some of the much bigger picture levels of things that are going to cost a lot and take multiple years to implement. And those include things like creating a Florida workforce or task force that is similar to the one Connecticut created after Sandy Hook.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these are much more expensive down the road things.
Yeah.
And I just want to point that out. But there is a lot of emotion. And I think, you know, having watched all of these commission meetings, you see that build. And I'd love to ask you, Senator Book, I mean, I feel like the tension this past month was pretty palpable, you know, especially between, you know, some family members and Sheriff Gualtieri. Did that tension in the room at all times, basically, for the past 2 days, influence what other commissioners felt like they could recommend or not recommend, or how you handled how you wanted to say something? Did that affect?
I think from the beginning of time, when, you know, we started our work 8 months ago, commissioners were very, very sensitive to the families, particularly Commissioner Schachter and Commissioner Petty, because we sit together. There are a lot of facts that people don't quite frankly know that we know. Confidential documents relating to the shooter, some of his mental health stuff, some of his school records. And so, again, we tend very much to be sensitive and respectful. And I think that we've created a very good dynamic. But it's a lot of work. It's a lot of intense work. And it's a lot of very heavy, serious things that I take very, very seriously. You know, I always remind myself that this is about these 13 students and three faculty members and community members who lost their children, lost their husbands. And so I think that it's very important that that when we look at these things, none of this was done in with any, you know, without tremendous amount of thought put into every single one of the recommendations.
There's a question on Twitter asking about credentials and level of expertise about the commission. What does it possess to make these kinds of decisions, and what data and research are you using to reach your conclusions? There's a chapter that discusses that, but just give us a quick oversight.
Sure. There are different folks that sit on this commission, tremendous, you know, law enforcement background that we've pulled from, but we've had, we have educators, we have folks who are in the mental health community, we have school board members, educators. There are a tremendous amount and depth in knowledge in the room, but more than that, we've had and have had presentations by the FBI, by FDLE, people who are experts in the field and in their respective fields. We've had Judge Leifman from Miami-Dade come up and talk about some of the mental health components. And so we have really, for the past 8 months, worked for hours and hours and hours.
In addition to that, you've got a lawmaker yourself and family members of victims.
Right. Absolutely. We've got Armando from Parkland. Go ahead, Armando. Thanks for holding on. Your thoughts here.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just want to say that I had a few years back experience with Detective Peterson. My oldest son was getting bullied at the school, and I had to come in a couple of times and deal with him. And I saw his demeanor then around the kids, and he really behaved like a bully around the kids. And it's just maddening now to hear that we're going to put more guns in the school, because here's a guy that was trained who behaved really tough around the kids. And on the day when he needed to be tough, he became the textbook example of a coward. I think it's a terrible idea to add more guns to the school. And the reason is that's like waiting for the hijacker to get into the plane to figure out what to do. Most of the kids at Stoneman Douglas, when the shooting started happening, not most, but a lot of the kids immediately had the thought, it's got to be Crew. And I've heard that from a number of students. So that means that the real failure here was not what could happen after the shooter was in the school. It was avoiding it.
Yeah.
And I have to believe that if there had been an employee or an ex-employee around the U.S. Senate that was behaving the way Crews did, they would have neutralized that threat.
I'm going to address that for a sec, Armando.
Armando.
Thank you.
Why did we not do that at the school?
Yeah, thank you for that input.
One piece of that pie I want to make sure that people understand about the commission's recommendations is that there's a kind of a mix of protective and preventative measures. So one idea that the commission's recommending is to create a separate Florida task force to look at federal ESE laws and then make recommendations.
ESE laws, those are...
exceptional student education.
Exceptional student education.
Special education.
Okay.
And look at, those laws are federal. So how we handle disciplining ESE students and what happens if they leave the school...
I mean, even not just even disciplining, but in this case, and because of some of the things that have come out and should not have, but, you know, this shooter was a student who was an ESE student, and that gives him certain rights within the school system. Mm-hmm. He is entitled to the least restrictive learning environment, as, you know, with any student within the system who has an IEP. And in that, you know, the commission did look at where does his right to the least restrictive learning environment end and the safety of everyone else begin.
Senator Book, let me just squeeze in one more phone call on this from Miami. Mike, you've been patient. You got a issue about teacher accountability in this. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, two points. One is I want to agree wholeheartedly with Armando, and I don't think you understood his point, which was this boy Cruz, Dylan Roof. I mean, any of these incidents have the same thing in common. These kids were known to have mental health issues, and that nobody helped them. It wasn't a discipline issue. This young boy needed help. He was crying out for help. As soon as they leave your home that morning, heavily armed, determined to kill some people, it's too late.
Mike, hold on. Senator Book, you wanted to respond to that?
I think that...
Well, can I ask a quick question also real quick, and I'll take the answer off the air.
Go ahead, Mike.
If you're talking about arming people, you're talking about these shootouts in the middle of the school, you're talking about arming teachers and janitors, et cetera. Now, we give our law enforcement wide latitude to use deadly force. We allow them to kill people without any consequence. Is that what we're going to extend as a society to the teachers and janitors in a school? We're going to allow them to use deadly force with no consequence? It's absolutely not only irrational, but it flies in the face of every kind of evidence we have that this is the wrong approach.
Gotcha.
But no one on this panel has ever talked one thing about the resources going into mental health and taking care of these children.
Mike, you got a lot there. Important pieces here to talk about. Let's take this one by one about Mike's critique and concern about the use of deadly force in a classroom.
The answer is no. No, not at all. That is not what the recommendation is. That is not what currently happens with the Guardian program at all whatsoever. And so I want to make sure that people understand that. And these are not at all. That's
so,
number one.
So his first point there was about the prior treatment and the knowledge and the ability for the school district to assess the threat prior to February 14th.
Absolutely. And so I'm actually going to talk a little bit about threat assessment. But I do want to address something else. The commission did look quite extensively at the shooter's mental health background, his school record, and the incidences at school. Because of HIPAA and FERPA, those are not public.
Those are both
those are the
federal privacy laws. One is for healthcare, one is for minors and students,
correct.
Essentially.
Correct. And I am not at liberty to speak about those. But please do understand that those are
so
things...
So are those an adherent, a deterrent to the kind of criticism that Mike is leveling at the system?
Yes, and that is what we are looking at, mm-hmm. and making recommendations that are federal issues that need to be handled. Because again, how can we have such siloed evidence, quite frankly, of issues that mm-hmm. may be occurring, and different entities not knowing or understanding somebody's true issues.
The caller's final point there on mental health. We've concentrated, admittedly so, in this conversation around arming school teachers specifically, as well as some of the law enforcement regarding engaging or not engaging with active shooters in the policy. There's 409 pages of this draft report to get into. If you can, in our final moments, Senator Book, is mental health a big piece of these recommendations? If not, will it be, in your estimation, in the years to come?
There is a chapter on some of the mental health components. It is, and we talked a lot about this at the meeting, not necessarily everything we wanted it to be. And those are things that we are going to be looking into quite extensively for the next phase of what this is, because we were looking at all of the what happened, how did it happen, and getting those out there. But I do also want to say, in terms of threat assessments and how, you know, people need to be aware.
And when you say threat assessment, how schools identify threats, how schools identify problems.
Students who may be a threat to their bodily harm to themselves or others. And, you know, a threat assessment was done here. It was handled terribly. And I think that we need to understand as a community, and one of the things that is a recommendation, there was an educator that was working on a threat assessment that said, this was the first time I'd ever done a threat assessment in 31 years.
Right.
There are schools that say that they've never done threat assessments.
Senator Book, we've got to leave it there. A lot to talk about in the days and weeks ahead. Thank you for joining us here on the Florida Roundup. Lauren Book, Democratic State Senator from Broward County, along with us, and WLRN's Broward County reporter Katie Swietlowski. Thank you as well.
Thanks, Tom.
Still to come, transit in Miami-Dade, a new elevated train going north, and how about state money for bus rapid transit going south? That's next on the Roundup. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. How about an elevated train going north in Miami-Dade County, or tens of millions of dollars from the state to speed up bus traffic going south? Have Miami's transit troubles finally turned a corner in the past couple of weeks? Well, last week, the county's Transportation Planning Board approved an elevated train to run above Northwest 27th Avenue up to the Broward County line. The money and timetable remain up in the air at this point. County Commissioner Barbara Jordan sponsored the rail plan and represents much of the corridor where it would run. She said the new train line will fulfill a long-held promise to the North Dade community.
34 years ago, when it was supposed to go north at the time, and it hasn't gone, we've been promising the community, and look at the traffic congestion. We need to become sophisticated enough to provide rail.
Linda Taylor lives in South Dade County. She hopes the train will speed up her northbound commutes.
Driving is such a big problem now. Sometimes from South Dade, it would probably take me 2 hours to get to North Dade.
So let's admit right now that bad traffic can be good for WLRN. We know lots of folks listen in their cars. We'll admit that. But we've certainly been talking about transportation and transit troubles for a good long time now. Earlier this year, the county decided against extending Metrorail South, opted instead for a bus rapid transit plan. This week, the state agreed to spend $100 million toward it. Miami Herald's Doug Hanks is along with us, following all things that move in Dade County with the County Commission. Welcome back to the Roundup. Will we look back in years in the future and say this is the week or the couple weeks where transit turned a corner in Miami-Dade?
No.
Why not?
Well, because the vote for Metro Rail North didn't change anything. It's like the commissioner said, they've wanted this for a generation, have never been able to deliver it, still are not able to deliver it. There's not the money. Everyone involved has said this privately. I think what you're hearing from the Jimenez administration is, well, let's go ahead and pursue the money from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
If they come through, which seems very unlikely, then great. We'll try to see what's possible.
Is it the one step forward, though, that federal and state regulators have been calling for, which is, what's the plan for transit investment?
No, I don't think so, because the plan has always been to expand rail. It's just there's not the money for it.
Hmm.
So it really hasn't been a lack of consensus. It's been almost a consensus that, well, we can't move forward with this because we don't have the money. Now, that's why the South Dade decision, I think, was significantly more important. In fact, you know, exponentially more, because they had the possibility of actually doing this rapid bus transit that
right.
the state just funded. And Metrorail was just as popular in the South, but those elected officials made the tough decision to say no to Metrorail. We're going to do with something that we know we can implement within a few years.
And fewer than 6 months later, here they've got $100 million from the state. It's a down payment, though. It's not of the full price tag, or am I incorrect in that?
It's not the full, but everyone I talk to seems very confident that there's $100 million from the feds for this, too. I mean, it's buses, right? I mean,
It's buses, it's stations, it's on-grade transportation, some signaling that has to happen.
So I don't think that money is as competitive. But, you know, Miami-Dade County does not have a rapid transit bus system right now, and it really could be what, kind of a tired term in county government, it's kind of a game changer in terms of people opening their eyes and saying, oh, well, maybe something other than rail is a big improvement. We'll see.
So why were these two efforts so different then? One, bus rapid transit. Less than 6 months after the approval, $100 million coming in from Tallahassee. The other, Metrorail fulfilling a 34-year-old latent promise.
Right. We should remember Metrorail was promised in the South as well. So that is a broken promise.
Yeah.
Ongoing. I mean, I think the big difference was there was an actual project at stake in South Dade, which is rapid, really they call it bus rapid transit. And as you can see, that is moving towards implementation, towards being funded. In the North, there really was not, because to create bus rapid transit up 27th, you'd have to take lanes. And there was all these very painful steps that would have to happen. Another big difference that they point to is you had a consultant in South Dade recommending what the administration wanted. The administration hired the consultant, which was bus rapid transit.
But another consultant, was it a separate consultant
for whatever reason, this consultant was reported to the state. They recommended against bus rapid transit and for Metrorail. So, I mean, that is the difference that the people who made the decision point to. They say, well, we had to do what the experts said.
So for the Transportation Planning Organization, which is kind of the first big stop for any of these projects, and then the County Commission, what are the takeaways here as it tries to continue to move forward with this SMART plan, which is looking at the corridors of travel as opposed to the modes of travel specifically between rail and bus?
Right. Well, they've checked off decisions for two, and...
But it sounds like the decision on the Metro, while the decision's been made for the Metrorail, sure, it's easy to say, let's do it. We've said that for a generation now. But then comes the decision that the County Commission has to make in terms of looking for funding as well as looking at its own revenues to help fund it, right?
That is true. I mean, when they took this vote in the North Dade, they said, we will develop a financial plan later. So, and maybe something will come together and there is federal money and... skeptical people like me will be proven wrong. Okay, fine. But that could have happened in South Dade, too. I mean, there was a firestorm at the idea of voting for this bus system, but the TPO did vote for it and got a firestorm of criticism.
Right.
So right now we could be talking about, like, well, maybe there is money for Metrorail in South Dade, but we're not. We're talking about money being delivered for rapid transit bus in South Dade. So there is significant progress in South Dade compared to what it could have been.
And so so for the transportation policymakers, again, as they look at this SMART plan, they've got several more corridors to look at and to decide. One, bus rapid transit. The argument was it was cheaper, easier, faster to do. Sure enough, here comes the state money. Rail is less disruptive for current traffic up Northwest 27th. We'll put together the financial plan how to pay for it later before we put shovels in the ground. Meantime, there's four other corridors they're still willing to consider.
Correct. And looks like the next one, I think that will be the big fight, will be to the beach. And that's what we've always thought of as Bay Link,
sure.
And that's not an easy one.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about a very expensive system, but also one that connects two of the busiest places around, Miami Beach and Miami.
And all of this also happens at a time with change in administrations in Tallahassee.
Yes.
Certainly. The lieutenant governor is from Dade County, as was the current lieutenant governor as well, so I'm not sure that necessarily changes anything. But also a bit of a change in terms of congressional leadership and the delegation at South Florida is sending up to Washington.
Right.
With Ileana Ross-Layton retiring, of course, Donna Shalala elected in the 27th district, and Carlos Corbella losing his reelection, and Debbie Mercosal-Powell taking over the 26th district. Is that figuring into any of the hallway talk that you're listening to, or the planning as these policymakers have to look for big dollars here?
Yeah, I think you would have to say yes, because the negative was in Congress, because there was always so much emphasis put on Mario Diaz-Balart because he is currently chairman of the of the Appropriations Committee that's in charge of transit money,
right?
Well, he's still there, but he's not going to be a chairman anymore because he's a Republican.
Right.
So, I mean, if that was like a true prospective boost for Miami-Dade, that's been lost. But, you know, I don't know. It strikes me as a local issue. I mean, the tough decisions are locally. Like, how are we going to even pay to run them?
Yeah.
Much less build them.
Right, right.
You know, you aren't really seeing anything definitive coming out of it. And certainly privately from the Jimenez administration, they emphasize not the money for these bold things. Now, of course, the mayor said it publicly. Rail is 19th century technology.
That's right. Yes, he did, as a matter of fact. Doug Hanks, writing about rail, bus, politics, you name it when it comes to county politics. Thanks, Doug. Great always to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
He's with our partner, the Miami Herald. Listen, that is the South Florida Roundup this week. Thanks again for listening. It is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontato is our digital director. Our news director here at WLRN is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio operations is Peter J. Mertz. Director of radio programming and our technical supervisor this hour is Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for calling, tweeting, listening, and supporting WLRN. Have a great weekend.